Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, finn@offbeatoregon.com. And this is the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thank you for loading me down and queuing me up, and I hope you enjoy this show. This is a story about the discovery of the Americas, as they like to say. Every year around Columbus Day, there arrives a spate of newspaper articles and magazine stories and things on the internet about the other suspects that may have quote-unquote discovered the New World long before Columbus did. A lot of these people you kind of have to root for just because Columbus was such a bad guy. But one in particular that hasn't gotten a lot of attention, probably because it's a pretty long shot, is a Buddhist monk from China who may have actually discovered Oregon 1600 years ago. Those of you who are descended from the folks who already lived here in Oregon at the time all of this discovery was going on will have to forgive the anachronism of the reference. See, the legend of this monk's journey to a land called Fusang dates back to 499 AD. Is it possible that Fusang was Oregon, or was the whole thing a complete fabrication? The smart money is on the complete fabrication explanation, but nobody really knows. Another quick caveat here, too. I don't speak Mandarin, so I have no idea what I'm doing to the pronunciation of some of the Chinese names you're about to hear. So forgive me for that as well, please. This story was first published on March 13th of 2011. Here we go. There's an ancient Chinese story about a monk named Hui Shan, who, at just about the same time the Roman Empire collapsed, set out on the open waters of the Pacific Ocean in search of new lands in which to spread his Buddhist faith. According to this legend, after many months of sailing due east, the monks made landfall in a strange place. A place that may actually have been Oregon. Hui Shan told his story in roughly the year 499, and neither he or somebody else wrote it down. According to this account, with other Buddhist monks, he had embarked in a junk, the standard Chinese sailing vessel of the day invented about 200 years before, and sailed due east into the rising sun. He'd estimated that they had sailed about 20,000 li, a Chinese unit of measurement, when they finally arrived at a place they called Fusang. Hui Shan's description of Fusang reads a little bit like an early version of a vision of utopia, a good argument for being skeptical. The people in Fusang, he relates, have a particular tree or plant, the Fusang tree, that supplies their every need. They eat its sprouts like bamboo shoots, it bears red pear-shaped fruits that keep for an entire year in cool storage, and its bark supplies fiber that's woven into clothing and made into paper. And yes, the society he describes is literate, with its own system of writing. The holy man goes on to describe the sociology of the place. Quote, "The people have no weapons and make no war," he recounts, as translated by Charles Leland in 1875. "No iron is found in this place, but copper, gold, and silver are not prized and do not serve as a medium of exchange in the market." Also, there are two prisons, a northerly one and a southerly one, maximum and minimum security, respectively. In the northerly prison, quote, "Those men and women who were imprisoned for life are allowed to marry," the account goes. "The boys resulting from these marriages were, at the age of 8 years, sold as slaves, the girls not until their 9th year." The people of Fusang have most of the livestock known in China, but use them somewhat differently, according to the report. Quote, "Stags are used here as cattle are used in the Middle Kingdom." That's China, of course. "And from the milk of the hind, they make butter." Also, the horns of the oxen are, quote, "so large that they hold 10 bushels, Hui Shan's account adds. "They use them to contain all manner of things." After this rather fantastic account of Fusang, the monk goes on to describe another land he visited, a land of pale women with very hairy bodies who have no breasts but rather suckle their children on particularly long clumps of hair. There are no men in this place. When they want to become pregnant, the women bathe in a magic river. Certainly, it's impossible to buy Hui Shan's story at face value, especially after reading his account of the land of women, in which he rather jumps the shark, as the saying goes. And the myth of the faraway people who know nothing of violence and strife is almost a universal human cliché. But this story is 1,600 years old. Is there any possibility that it's based, at least in part, on truth? Could a Chinese sailing vessel have made it to the Oregon coast or any place else on the continent and made it back home again. Sailing to Oregon from China is certainly possible, given a little luck and the right kind of weather. Every year, hundreds of glass fishing floats make it across the Pacific, courtesy of a current that runs this way from the sea off Japan. And in fact, in 1833, a Japanese sailing ship wrecked at Cape Flattery on what's now the Washington coast, at the time it was part of the Oregon Territory, and three of its sailors were rescued by the British and taken to Fort Vancouver. They ended up going home via Europe, completely circumnavigating the globe in the process. Sailing back to China to tell the tale would be trickier. The prevailing winds off Oregon and Washington come out of the southwest. Great for coming this way, not so hot for going back. But if the monks moved down the coast to Mexico before disembarking, they would find the situation of the wind reversed. It is, theoretically, possible. The story of Hui Shan's adventures read a little bit like Homer's Odyssey. And like the Odyssey, there's probably a kernel of true history in it somewhere, buried deep beneath centuries of distortions and additions from thousands of scribes and storytellers through the years. If all the fantasy could be stripped away, if we could somehow forensically reconstruct the real story of Hui Shan and his fellow monks, there is an actual possibility that we would be crediting him and not Christopher Columbus or Leif Erikson with the, quote, discovery of the Americans in general and of Oregon in particular, remote though that possibility really is. Well, that's our show for today. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. In addition to the podcast, it includes a weekly newspaper column, a series of live history shows, a daily RSS feed to catch on your smartphone newsreader, a Facebook page, a couple other minor components too. Photographs and other visual goodies that go with today's show are on offbeatoregon.com, where you will also find full citations to the sources for this story. The podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band, atlasstringband.com, and was written by Carmen Ficarra. I do Offbeat Oregon History for fun and to learn things, so I don't jeopardize that by selling advertising or asking for donations. However, if you enjoy Offbeat Oregon History and you'd like to support it, you can always pick up a copy of my book. If you enjoy this show, I can pretty much guarantee you'll enjoy the book. It's called Wicked Portland. It was published by the History Press in 2012, and they're available at community bookstores, or you can order a signed copy from the store link at offbeatoregon.com. Sells for $20. Finally, if you're ever in Corvallis, drop me a line. Maybe we can grab a cup of coffee and talk history. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com. Our next show will be coming your way around 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. And until then, go out and fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.